Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. It is 10 o'clock and time for us to get down to brass tacks. So this Tuesday, my name is Peter Wickham. It's good to be with you. I am in the distinguished company of Mr. Dennis Johnson, who on other days is also your host. But today, Dennis is part of the supporting cast. He's the person that will answer the phone when you call, and he is the person who will cut you off when you misbehave. So that is the story for this morning. I'm happy to be with you. We run until 2 p.m. No school sports today, as I understand it. Next week, we have the main event, which will mean that we won't be on the air, period. So it's good to be with you. And we, of course, will start with a few remarks from me. And I guess, unsurprisingly, my concerns this morning are related to this matter of Guyana, which continues to be a challenge and a source of concern for many of us across the Caribbean. I find it particularly disturbing that I am hearing comments regarding the political affiliation of observers and others, including myself, although if a person does not support a position that is taken by the APNU-AFC, if a person finds the circumstances in which counting process that was started was abruptly discontinued strange, we are labeled supporters of the PPP Civic, and people believe that there is some kind of racial preference in this regard. I find it disturbing, but such is the nature of Guyanese politics. You know, I continue to say that we in the Caribbean need to grow up a bit sometimes and be able to look at matters objectively. And in all of this, we have to remember that our preference in terms of an outcome is not necessarily always consistent with the truth. And that's one of the things that I have learned in this business, that it is not always about my preference. It is about what the reality is. So that is the way it is. I ran some numbers over the past few days to give you three potential scenarios. The first scenario that I ran relates to a proposed, the data that was presented by GCOM for Region 4. Since we agree on all of the other regions, we agree on 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. If we don't agree on Region 4, and we use the data which has been supplied by the APN, sorry, it's been supplied by GCOM, and they're suggesting that the APNU had some 136,458 votes in that region compared to the PPP 77,329. They are proposing that there would have been a swing of minus 2.5% in favor of the APNU, or a swing of 1% in favor of the APNU, and a swing away from the PNC of minus 2.5%. Bear in mind that there's some third parties in there that would affect that whole swing relationship. If that is the case, the APNU AFC wins. They win overall, even though there's a swing against them at the national level of minus 1%. Sorry, a swing against them at the national level of 0.04%. And in that constituency, they would have gained 1% support in an environment where they're losing support in practically every other region. The PPP Civic data, which is alleging or arguing that the support level for the APNU is not 136,000, but 114,000, and theirs is not 77,000, but it is 80,000. And they're suggesting that there would be a PPP Civic victory with a positive swing in favor of the PPP in that constituency of 2.3%, nationally of 1.6%. This is entirely consistent with what I've been seeing in all other instances in that election. I also ran a third scenario, and this would be that the support level for 2020 is identical to the support level for 2018. And in that regard, we will be giving the APNU AFC 113,000 votes, and we will be giving PPP Civic 70,000 votes, if that is the situation based on 2015. The outcome there is still a victory for the PPP Civic. The swing, of course, in the constituency would be zero because we would assume that it was the same it has last time. And overall, it would be a 1%, which is consistent with what people are saying. So basically, this is the situation. The only outcome that would be favorable to the current administration, the status quo, would be the use of the data that they have provided. If we use the PNC data, the PPP data, of course, then they are winning. If we use the historic data, that essentially gives back exactly what you had in the election, last election, and I should point out that the PPP Civic did better this time around than it did in the last election, but let's assume that it didn't and you gave them back the same level of the result, they still win. So this is a challenge that I have. The scenario that is being presented by GCOM seems statistically odd and irregular. Now, I point out that we had an election in Barbados in 2013 where there were similar oddities, where there was an equal swing. So it is entirely possible, and I'm not for 1 minute saying it is impossible. I'm just saying that it would appear odd to have a situation in which you have an average of 1 to 2% swings away from you in all other regions. But when you come to region 4, you automatically increase your support by close to 3 percentage points. I find it a bit odd. But I guess it could happen. But the broader picture, though, I think is a question of us being able to look at the situation in Georgetown and try to understand what is the reason for this dramatic shift in terms of the way the statement of polls are being used. The president made a speech last night, and I thought it was entirely unhelpful, in which he essentially said, you know, we're waiting on GCOM to tell us what the outcome is. He has not addressed any of the fundamental underlying issues that has led them to court. He said that the Congress was going smoothly until such time as the people from the PNC, the PPP Civic, became unruly. And that was when the Congress stopped, and then they were served with an injunction. And really, those are the only two reasons why they have not declared the result yet. He has not addressed any of the underlying concerns about the reason why there were objections raised to the statement of polls in the first place and the use of the spreadsheet as an alternative. All of that he's completely ignored, but he's just gone to this question of, we just need to let GCOM do the work and declare the results, swear me in as president, and we can get back to normal. Doesn't work as easily as that, buddy. This has been Down to Brass Tacks, or this will be Down to Brass Tacks, 434-1790. You can also email me at peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. Or you can contact me using the WhatsApp chat, 266-IVOB. And I remember, I'm with you until 2 p.m. and I look for 1 p.m. Oh, there, I'm sorry. Dennis has just told me that I made a mistake earlier. It is 1 p.m. for school sports. So we have a truncated program today. Let's get right to the calls and see if we can get some conversation going. Down to Brass Tacks, good morning.
Morning, Mr. Beckham.
Morning, sir. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Good.
Actually, you know, I was listening to your analysis, you and a gentleman, sometime early in the week.
Mm-hmm. It was on Sunday.
Huh?
On Sunday.
Probably on Sunday.
Yeah.
And, you know, funny enough, from your analysis, I was able to come to the conclusion that the AP and you won. I can tell you why. You were saying, and you all were saying, that how the PPP supporters had expectations. But for some reason, you all did not focus in on the expectations of the people who will vote for the AP and you in Region 4.
Mm-hmm.
Because if oil is playing a factor, it's obvious that the PPP will play that in this stronghold and gain support. And I think that's the vital point that everybody is missing in this analysis, that the oil is a factor and that the... Based on what you're saying, it is clear that the Region 4 will be anti the other region and that they will be backing their...
What evidence do you have to suggest that oil is a bigger factor in Region 4 than it is in Region 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, and 10?
You ready?
Yeah.
Voting pattern.
No, but the data is suggesting something very different.
No,
explain.
No. I am talking. What you are missing, the AP and you always depend on Region 4 to bring them home. Am I wrong? And And I got this from
both,
you.
Both parties rely on Region 4 to bring them home because it's the largest region.
No. I'm talking about the...
I'm saying that both parties rely on Region 4 to bring them home.
No, I agree. But which is the stronghold for the particular party?
Okay, bear in mind that in Guyana, the idea of a stronghold is not really relevant because all of the votes have equal weight. So this idea of identifying a region, it just really has geographic significance. And I agree geographically, it holds more support. The level of the support in Region 4 holds more support in terms of the APNU. I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm just saying that to suggest that the PPP Civic has abandoned it is not true.
No, I didn't say that because based on their financier, who I could not discount either, the gentleman that was supposed to deliver 10,000 votes for them, and he admitted he could not deliver it, and he told the PPP that.
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're talking about.
No, but actually...
No, but if you're going to speak facts, let's speak facts. Let's not speak speculation.
But we are speaking facts, Peter.
That is APNU propaganda about somebody giving somebody $10,000. Come off it. Look, let's talk facts.
No. What $10,000?
Sir, let us talk facts.
I did not mention anything about $10,000.
You just said 10,000 votes. 10,000 votes.
Right. But that is what is published.
It's not published. Listen, let's deal with the data, okay? You were going well until you went off on our tangent. Let's deal with the data.
Won't have an opinion, and you need to stop it.
You know what? I have so little time. I have so little time for you and your attitude regarding me.
You hear that?
So I would like attitude. I would like you to tell me what exactly you called to say, no, and then let's put down the phone.
Can you discuss? Because apparently.
All right. Let's end it. Let's move on. Dennis, can I have another call, please? Thanks a lot. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning. I had 10 years of dealing with him and his foolishness. I am not engaging it any longer. We can either have a conversation about facts and data, or we can have a conversation about speculation. If he wants to do that, he can do that with any of the five other hosts, but not me. Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Good evening. Good morning.
Morning, sir. How are you doing?
I attended a town hall meeting pertaining to the role of Iberia yesterday. And it was very informative. But I noticed there were some notable absentees, the minister being one of them. In fact, none of them was there. Now, I was told it was cabinet. This meeting started at 6 o'clock, the actual meeting. And by that time, cabinet would not have been in the birth stages, as it was called. Would have been winding down. You want to tell me that one of those ministers, especially senior ministers, couldn't have attended that meeting? Also, I noticed the permanent secretary was there. He was not on the podium. He was in the audience. He said nothing. Nothing. This Johnson is what I call a killer Johnson. Three people have died. Right? And I will hope that government and the Ministry of Public Works move swiftly to agree on placing traffic lights. I also mentioned that a pedestrian light should be placed by the Gordon Green School with a cross signal attached to it to stop traffic. People were talking about a roundabout. A roundabout to me, it's going to take longer because you have to go through the land acquisition process, which sometimes takes years. I believe in traffic lights. The reason why, all traffic stop in all directions. Right? And I hope that they move swiftly to remedy that problem.
All right. Thanks a lot, Mr. P, for making that introductory comment. I appreciate hearing from you. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning, 434-1790. Remember, we're only here until 1, so we're going to have to move a little more swiftly than normal today. Good morning.
Good morning, Peter.
Hey, good morning.
Glenn Murray, how are you, sir?
Hey, Glenn, how are you doing?
Yeah. I'm good.
I'm hoping you're calling to win on Guyana.
But I hadn't, but I'm saying that that's the uppermost topic, and it really the topic is very, very topical. I thought I'd join in that, too. Particularly, too, because I am not satisfied that we are getting an adequacy of information flow out of Guyana as we would hope, given the current situation. I think that we're getting drips and drabs and all that, and that helps to lead to the uncertainty, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I was what struck me is that what is happening or what seems to be from our report, what is happening regarding Region 4 made me recall a statement made by Forbes Burnham in 1976.
That governments don't lose elections.
When Earl Barr lost the election, he said, not government, he said, yeah, incumbent governments. He's astonished that incumbent government in power could lose an election. And therefore, it seems to me that therefore there's a manifestation that political cultures, like any other cultures, take time to change and take people and need people to drive the change. Because that attitude, that what the sentiment that Burnham expressed reflected the political attitude and practices that were at work in Guyana in those days in his term or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, this is very disturbing. And we saw that in those days. What is bothering me is that if there's a worst case scenario, if the government changes now, or if the government changes, or you get the government done to change, but there is objection to the methodology that's being done, how would the rest of CARICOM treat the government thing? I know in politics, you deal with the government in power, the de facto government, but still, for democracy and political morality and the principles that we advocate and hold there, I would hate to think that this would just be accepted and ignored and brushed aside in the interest of CARICOM solidarity. I would think that if there's a negative, if there's an outcome that with which we are not pleased because of what went on, the untoward part that went on, that we would have some form of expressing it and let it be known to the government that it does not meet the standard, the smell test of CARICOM and the other countries in the Caribbean and our political practice.
But is that not what has already happened, Glenn?
I mean, I'm looking for the final outcome now. I mean, not just talk. I want action then. In other words, I just don't talk about it and deal with people. I think you have to be able to express, go beyond just talk and express it in our behavior that we do not right. subscribe to that behavior.
Do you think, the question I would ask is, do you think that CARICOM has a right to take a position regarding the legitimacy of an administration going forward? Do you believe that we have that right? Because I get a sense out of Georgetown that supporters of the government are telling us that we need to mind our own business. Certainly they've told me to mind my own business, but that's not unusual because all they're telling me to mind my own business where it's convenient.
But certainly, Peter, if you can request and accept and facilitate observers, outsiders,
mm-hmm.
in the process, those outsiders certainly have a right to comment on the process they observe. I think that's a natural extension of involvement.
Yeah.
So you're not sitting abstractly in your hometown, in your headquarters, and just commenting on results. You are part of the process. You were brought in to be part to invigilate the process,
mm-hmm.
to supervise the process. Therefore, to me, that is a natural, logical, even moral progress that you should be able to comment on what you saw. It's like you, Peter, at university, how do you mark it?
Right.
When you mark somebody's paper, you teach them, but you should have a right to mark them too. Mm-hmm. Understand what you taught.
Yeah.
And we have common.
No,
supposed to have,
right. Sorry, no. Go ahead.
We're supposed to have common goals and common practices and all. I think that the only way people, you don't want the kind of scandal that goes on in Eastern Europe and Africa, where people tolerate despots and bad and democratic practices and processes and government just to be able to maintain a superficial veneer of being together in unity and solidarity. In the solidarity that was given to Burnham, a lot of that, from my recollection, came because in those days of the Cold War, it was Russia, et cetera, supporting JEG, the PPP, and America and democracy and capitalism supposed to be supporting Burnham.
Mm-hmm.
You see? And therefore, we were brainwashed. In those days, there were very limited sources of information. We were made to believe that communism is bad, and therefore we got support. You know, live with Burnham or whatnot. But I would like to think we've gone beyond that. We've matured. We are more clear. We are clearer minded. We are now independent for a while. We can therefore be able to stand on our feet and speak out. You're not interfering in somebody that you are inviting me to come in through CARICOM, etc. So therefore, I should have a right to say what I saw and did not see.
I mean, the other thing for me personally is that I think that as CARICOM, we are a family. And I remember when in St. Kitts and Nevis, when the counting was stopped. This is a completely identical situation. In St. Kitts and Nevis around 2 a.m. In last election in 2015, counting was stopped. Sorry, counting was concluded. The declarations were stopped for reasons best known to the chief electoral officer. And he just said he was going to leave and go inside. He's not declaring any more results tonight. Just so. He closed the briefcase and he went home, right? Within an hour, we had on the telephone line, not within an hour, it was 2 hours because I had to wake up. We had on the phone lines and on public broadcasts, Ralph Gonzalez out of St. Vincent. And at the time, Roosevelt Skerritt was chairman of CARICOM. And they both went on public radio and they said, the whole idea of discontinuing a declaration in midstream is unfortunate and it is dangerous for democracy, and it is also dangerous because you create a situation where the ferment among people who believe they have won, who know they have won because of what was counted and revealed at the counting stations, are feeling as though power is being taken away. And to the best of my knowledge, they made not only public intercessions, but they also, can you say intercession in this kind of situation?
Yeah, intervention.
Right. Interventions, right. Intercession is the religious version.
But they don't have a religious intervention. Maybe that might be it.
Right. So they made these interventions or intercessions, both publicly and also privately, in terms of speaking to Denzel Douglas. And then Denzel Douglas, around 6 o'clock in the morning, he came on public radio. He didn't concede for all intents and purposes, but he pretty much said that, you know, it was clear that people had won. And I think that that is significant because when you have a family dispute, normally, you look to your brothers and sisters to help you deal with this issue.
But it all depends on how close, what is the nature of the family? Are they brothers and sisters or cousins and nephews and nieces? How close do you see me as a family member?
Well,
am
right.
A general family member, an extended family member, am I close enough to you to be trying to impact on your behavior?
But I thought we were brothers and sisters. And that's the reason why I used to behave so badly when they were deporting my people by the dozens. Under the previous administration, I was always very strident in the belief that you don't treat your brothers and sisters so. I was strident when they deported Sherry Myrie and did those unconscionable things to her because you don't treat your brothers and sisters so. So I thought that we were a family. I'm beginning to believe that maybe these delusions I have are delusions that are only not reflected in that regard.
And, well, but welcome to the club.
Right, but the other point I wanted to get to though is this large overseas vote that used to vote remotely. So the size of the diaspora overseas was such that they could vote remotely, they could vote by proxy. So you had control over what happened on the ground, but you really had no control over the proxies that were coming in.
Right.
The other thing is that they used to transport all of the ballots to Georgetown to essentially count them in Georgetown in one centralized location. So when something leaves the Rupununi and makes its way to Georgetown,
anything can happen.
It takes a long time. In those days, it used to take a lot longer, a lot of time. You used to use boat and thing, and you really don't know what will happen to ballot box by the time we get to Georgetown. Those things have been cleaned up, because there's no longer an overseas vote, and for better or worse. And secondly, the situation is now where the votes are counted at the location. There's the statement of polls they're signed off on, and then the statement of polls that are transported to Georgetown along with the ballot boxes after they have already been counted under seal. And that is supposed to have solved that problem.
A process is only as clean and good and wholesome as if you administer it.
And therein lies my problem.
Right. Because Burnham's era, Burnham was a very repressive, dominant man. I remember, I was covering CARICOM for the Advocate in those days. I went to CARICOM for heads of government conference, and I was questioned at the airport as to why you come in there, and they had to go. I was given a start. They had to go 2 days later to report my presence in the Ministry of Home Affairs, even though I was functioning at CARICOM. So you know. And that disillusioned me. And you were scrutinized as though you were some alien person come to interrupt their operations and whatnot. So I have never been this. I've never fallen for the rhetoric and the platitude about brothers and sisters. Each country has its own interests, and when it's convenient to them, we'll be first cousins, and then next day you'll be outside China, depending on what they want out of it.
All I would say, Glenn, is that I hope that if the opportunity ever arises in Barbados where a similar situation occurs, God forbid, and this is Peter Wickham, the atheist, saying God forbid, that our brothers and sisters in CARICOM would rush to defense of our own democracy in the same way that we are rushing to the defense of theirs. And that's all I would ask. Because I acknowledged that there have been times in the past, not only in Barbados, in other Caribbean countries, or should I say not only in other Caribbean countries, in Barbados, where the outcome has not gelled with what my sense was. And I could think of 2013 in Barbados. The outcome surprised me, and it was inconsistent with my expectations, which is the same situation now. This outcome surprised me because it was inconsistent with my expectations. However, we have to follow the basis of the evidence that is given to us in terms of votes. And we have to understand that even if you may not like a particular outcome, if it is the will of people, it's the will of God. And that's the way it works in this business. Right? You got the final word, Glenn.
Yeah, I said you should tell that not only to the politicians in Barbados, but also people like Trump.
Yeah, but we them and our brothers and sisters, though.
All right, David, yeah. Good talking to you.
All right, okay. Take care. This is Down to Brass Tacks. We'll be right back.
The latest help.
Welcome back to Down to Brass Tacks. I have a couple of WhatsApp messages I want to read for you. Well, this one comes in today. What nonsense am I hearing, though? Peter needs to educate himself. His arguments are so flawed, stoops. Mr. Kelman is never disrespectful, so don't try to pull out there that you're tired of his behavior. Imagine a political saying that the only significance the regions in Guyana's whole is geographical. Wow. It's like saying that there's no BLP or DLP strongholds. The significance is their geographical location. Political scientists. Yeah. All right. Let me just read a couple more. Peter, the House of Assembly is in session to very late discussing the estimates. Perhaps you should be doing the same. Peter, why is it that we have difficulty on VOB, the stream? It's been 2 weeks now and I cannot get to hear brass tacks. Is there a cause? No, because when these things happen, what about to come up most of the time? You have a good day, Beijing living over and away. And I'm sorry, sir, Dennis is in the studio, so maybe he can give some... he's shaking his head. He doesn't understand what's happening either. Just remember, you can download the podcast and listen to it later, commercial free. Peter, Region 4 is always strong for AP and you. PPP never won Region 4. Stop being biased in defending the PPP. Good morning. I think the Honorable Mia Motley needs to put undercover people with hidden cameras at government palaces to see how the public people really get treated. I'm here at the hospital waiting for an appointment. The only person working is a receptionist. I came here at 9:15. And the queue was at 3:20, and it is now 10 o'clock, and it is at 3:22. Workers just walking about on the phone doing as they like, and the line is getting longer and longer. This is totally unacceptable. You know, one of my challenges in all of this question, sorry, Peter, can you answer my question? Were you an observer in Ghana election? Secondly, why are they stopped account? Why cannot the observers do something? And who gave the opposition opinion that they won? Because I felt someone inside did it. I've never seen such. I live here in my life, my children, etc. But this election, oh boy, something else will have to happen. I will listen to your comments. Thank you. One of the challenges I'm having in relation to this whole issue is that I find that I have tried to present as professional and objective an analysis of the data as I possibly can. But yet still, people keep saying things that are not making sense. So for example, we just had one of the comments where someone suggested that I'm trying to say that the PPP Civic won Region 4. And the PPP Civic has never won Region 4. And indeed, the GCOM formulation, the APNU formulation, and the historic formulation, the PPP Civic does not win Region 4. So that has not been an issue. We're talking about a difference between a number of votes that amounts to about 2% of the total population of Region 4. I am not suggesting that they won Region 4. I am just saying that the trends would suggest that they would not have done as well in Region 4. The question of how is it that people seem to be of the opinion that it's something different? All of these objectors that are saying nasty things to me need to answer this important question. You have statement of polls based on counts that are done at the place of polling. Remember I spoke to Glenn just now about the changes that were made post-Burnham? That's one of them. So you vote and you count the same place, their statement of polls based on the outcome. those statement of polls are given to the party scrutineers, and then the information is sent to Georgetown. The verification process is one in which the GCOM goes through and verifies that what you signed off on in the Rupununis, what you signed on in quarantine, is the same thing that I am seeing here before me. And that's where the problem started. Everyone agreed that the sign-off sheets in relation to all the other regions were similar. When it came to Region 4, however, they started a process, and somewhere along the line, we were told that one of the persons was tired. When the new person came, the data that was introduced did not match. And that's really all the problem is. So this idea that I know something that nobody else don't know is foolishness. And I'm saying that if you want to be amateurish in your analysis of the data, you can continue to say things that are not true. I am not suggesting that the PPP Civic won Region 4. They are not suggesting that they won Region 4. No one is suggesting that they won Region 4. What is being suggested is that they got more votes in Region 4 than it is being suggested that they did. And what I am also saying is that if we look at the trends in terms of the data across the island, across the country, you will see that in all other instances, the PPP Civic gained support. In a situation where your vote count would have been 49% in the last election, and you have gained support, the probability of your having more support than your opponent is higher. In all other instances, the APNU lost support, other than in terms of Region 4, where they gained apparently 3% support, which is entirely inconsistent with the rest of the country. This argument that Dennis was trying to introduce in us now about the fact that oil made a difference in Region 4 that it didn't make anywhere else is something that I object to, because it does not make sense. It's illogical. Why is it that people in Region 4 will be more concerned about oil than people in all of the other regions? It's as though they're not living on the same geographical landmass. Down to Brass Tacks, good morning. Good morning and welcome. You're on Down to Brass Tacks.
Hello, good morning.
Hi, morning, sir. Ma'am, sorry, how are you doing?
Hey, good.
Good.
I really can't talk about this, but to me, they could either have a go at it again.
What's this?
Or form a coalition.
Oh. Yeah, but the point is they already have coalitions. Mm-hmm. Both sides are coalitions. The APNU-AFC is a coalition that includes the PNC, the PNCR, and several other small parties, the WPA and a few other ones that are rolled into there. And then the PPP Civic is a well-known coalition. The problem is that you're suggesting it should be a coalition of the two main parties, and who going to lead it?
Yeah.
Or who will lead it?
They don't have president and prime minister.
Right, but the point is the president and the prime minister have to come from the same party.
Oh.
The same coalition.
Okay.
So you're saying that you should take the prime ministerial candidate from one and the presidential candidate from the other?
Why not?
Which one?
I mean, rather than loss of life, I hear to say somebody died.
Somebody got shot, yeah.
And it's like, oh dear.
But you don't think, ma'am, the bigger issue ought to be that the rules of the game should be fair and should be played by?
It should be. But if they have all these doubts, well, Region 4, do that again.
Well, it might come to that, but if you do Region 4 over and the result you get is not the result you expect, are you going to go through this process again?
No, this is final.
But this is the thing, ma'am. The forces down there that be, the powers that be, are asking themselves, can you really put confidence in an organization like GCOM to administer another election? I would think not.
They have observers from all over the world. They should do their best.
But the observers have been expressing concern about the way that GCOM has handled themselves.
Well, observers actually are at the polling stations and so on?
Of course. Observers would have been in the polling stations. Observers would be in the counting stations. Observers are allowed to go to the political meetings and listen to what's going on. Observers move around and speak to people in the community. My experience with observers is that essentially once an observer drops into the country, they're usually assigned a driver and they're entitled to go anywhere they want. And in the case of Guyana, I know that observers go into the interior by plane along with the ballot boxes and whatnot. In Dominica, I remember I was at the Central Compton Station at their electoral office. And after the election, You saw observers traveling with the ballot boxes from Portsmouth all the way into Roseau, several hours, and you saw them arriving with the police and the observers. And then the party scrutineers were allowed to follow the ballot boxes all the way down if they wanted to. Yeah, it's...
All of this is because of mistrust, lack of fear, differences in between the two ethnic groups.
Mm-hmm.
All those things need to be dealt with. We as human beings. And somebody said, oh, yeah, a lot has got to do with, not just in one area, but a lot has got to do with the power now that we bring. And all it can be a blessing or a curse, according to how people... how greedy people are.
Yeah.
Okay, but I really have cause to.
But ma'am, you know, there's nothing unusual, huh? And I've never encountered a political scenario in which one side didn't want to win. Both sides wants to win.
Yeah,
and
but, I mean,
because the two sides have different complexions racially, it don't make a difference. They still ultimately want to win. So that's normal.
We as human beings like to say this is normal, that is normal, but God wants better for us, and if we continue with that is normal and this is normal, well, all these things will continue to happen.
Well, but ma'am, I would say this to you, that I want both sides to get along, but I also realize that I live in a real world. And my thing is, you want both sides to get along. There's no difference between the Afro and the Indo-Guyanese. Ultimately, there's really no difference fundamentally. But we need to have a system that allows for a fair and free expression of both sides and for a winner to emerge. And that, to me, is you set rules of the game that are fair and impartial, that would allow people to compete, and then you respect the outcome. And that's where the challenges come in, that the perception is that both sides are not respecting the outcome and the process.
Yeah.
You know?
All right, can I go on?
Sure, yeah, go ahead, please.
I try not to be too long.
Mm-hmm.
All right. This might be connected a bit too. Okay, we have a saying here. I hope it's not in other black, Indian black diaspora, that black people are like a bucket of crabs. And it was said Friday gone, I think. And as soon as one tried to get up, the next pulling back up, pulling down, right? And if we are likened on the crab, I don't think that crabs pull down each other just to say, I ain't want you get up there. As soon as I observed it, when I was young, you know, my father bought home crabs. And when one gets to the top, the other, he wants to get up as well. And he's holding on, hoping that he'll be able to get up there too. He's not trying to pull down the other one. And the others behind him, as soon as they see him coming up, they grab hold of that other one. So it's more like a chain. I think some kind of ants do it. And we propagate that among ourselves. And that is a story from slavery. And I was more surprised when...
But what evidence?
A relative of mine, right, quite young, he and his friend went to work with this guy. This guy was white, to get something to do on weekends. And you know that he told him that story. And that's that black people are like a bucket of crabs. And we have fallen upon that. And I want us to stop pulling down each other with those kind of words and those kind of story. It is not true. Every race that we, I don't know, people who never left Barbados may not know certain things, right?
Mm-hmm.
But every race have the way of selfishness and greed, right? You do not hear the Chinaman say the Chinese are the worst people in the world. You don't hear the whites saying the whites are the worst people in the world. You don't hear the Indians saying the Indians are the worst people in the world. But yet we as black people are always saying that we are worse people were against each other.
But what I'm trying to find out from you was when was this said, ma'am?
When it was said?
When was this said?
Pardon?
When was it said?
Recently.
By whom?
I told you that a relative of mine and his friend wanted a little thing to do. And they went to work with this white guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he told him so. black people are like a bucket of crap. Yeah.
I know, but ma'am, listen, that's a private conversation, and
no,
I don't know.
It is said all around, Peter.
But ma'am, I'm saying that it's not said
it
on this
said
program.
On radio last week. Yes.
Who said it on radio last week?
Yeah, there was a conversation going on last week where we said that we don't like each other. We like a bucket of crap.
You're talking about that. You're talking about that with regard to this Guyana situation or with regard to something else?
No, I'm saying there's something else. Like talk, because it upset me hearing it over and over from a child. And still now, people are saying it and telling it to our children. Yeah.
All right,
right?
Ma'am.
It's not right.
Ma'am, I want to thank you for your contribution. I fundamentally disagree with you that this is a well-held view. There may be some people that hold that opinion, and I think that that's unfortunate. But one of the things you learn in this business I am in now is that there are a lot of people that hold some very weird views, you know, and they're allowed to call on the calling program and express them. No one can call on this program and say something as ridiculous as that and get away with it, because you know that I don't countenance nonsense. So maybe they spoke to one of the others, I don't know, but certainly not with me. Someone is asking me if the difference between Guyana and elections and Barbados elections, do seats count? Seats count in both instances. The difference in Barbados is that we elect representatives and then we count the seats based on the number of elected representatives. In Guyana, they vote for lists. And list is a number of people on a list which relate to a particular party. So in the case of Guyana, the seats do count, but the seats are determined based on the level of support that a party receives. So the more important factor is the party. In the case of Barbados, the seats are determined based on elected representatives. You vote for a representative, and that's probably the easiest way I can put it. The point I was making is that the idea of counting and looking at the differences geographically, because in Barbados, the constituencies are almost equal, and people represent a constituency. In the case of Guyana, the regions are just an administrative division because they have different numbers. So for example, Region 4 that we're talking about is the largest in the country and would naturally have the greatest significance to most political parties. It is also the highest concentration of black people, and I'm certainly not going to deny that fact, that it has the highest concentration of black people in Guyana because of the location it is geographically. But the regions have really only geographic significance. But politically, it is not as though one is more important or less important than the other, because ultimately, when it comes down to it, if you win Region 4 and you lose everywhere else, if you win Region 4 by, let's say, 80%, and you lose everywhere else, you're probably not going to win the election anyhow. And that's the point. The difference in terms of the breakdown in Region 4 is like about 60-40. And that's the historical thing. 60% to the APNU or PNC, 40% to the PPP Civic. And that's about the ratio that we've had historically. Dr. Brastatz, good morning. Oh, we can take a few messages and come right back.